we continue on in Mark, we're in Mark chapter 2. Last week I brought out two incidents in the life of Jesus that had to do with what I consider, and then we're going to continue that this morning by looking at two more incidents. And what I consider and what I call that Jesus turns things inside out to those around him, and specifically the religious leaders of the day, how he turns things inside out. The third incident in Mark chapter 2 involves fasting. And the fourth incident involves an incident that takes place on the Sabbath. And we're going to look at each in turn this morning, because what does that have to do with us? Again, Jesus was turning things upside down for them. He was turning things inside out, doing things, saying things that they had never heard. So this third incident, as we come to, in Mark chapter 2, is found in verses 18 to 22. And that occurs sometimes after the second incident. We don't know how long from that. But this is what it says. John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. And they came and said to Jesus, "Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" And Jesus said to them, "While the bridegroom is with them, the attendants of the bridegroom cannot fast, can they? So long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast in that day. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the patch pulls away from it. The new from the old, and a worse tear results. No one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and the wine is lost. And the skins as well. But one puts new wine into fresh wine skins." So, this is the third incident. This occurs sometime again, as I said, after the second incident. And this time it has to do with fasting. And then again, it involves those Pharisees, and now with John's disciples too as well, but it involves those Pharisees who think they got it all figured out. And Jesus turned things inside out for them, because they don't have it all figured out. They think they do. There's many people today who think that they've got it all figured out. They don't. And Jesus is still turning things inside out. He's still turning people inside out. Now, if you look at Matthew chapter 9, verses 14 and 17, and Luke chapter 5, verses 33 to 39, you'll find there the parallel passage that goes along with what Mark is saying. But they give us a little more detail. Then the disciples of John came to him asking, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not?" And then in Luke chapter 5, we have a little more detail here, which is found in Luke chapter 5, verses 33 through 39. And they said to him, "The disciples of John often fast and offer prayers. The disciples of the Pharisees also do the same. But yours eat and drink." So it's like what they are saying to Jesus is this: "What's up with you? What's up with you and your disciples? How come they're not fasting? We do. The Pharisees fast." Can you imagine what we have here? Is that the Pharisees have went to the disciples of John the Baptist and said, "Look, because some of the disciples of Jesus, remember, had been disciples of John the Baptist." So the Pharisees go to the disciples of John the Baptist and say, "Look, the disciples of this man Jesus, they don't fast. What's up with that? Don't you think you should find out something about that?" So they instigate it. The scribes of the Pharisees do. But now see, and they go and they ask Jesus this: "Why aren't you guys fasting? We do. Pharisees do. Your disciples aren't doing that. What are you teaching them?" And that's in essence what they are asking Jesus. "What are you teaching them? What are you telling them? They should be fasting." Now you see, fasting, which we don't often talk about today, and it's not a common practice. It's not a common practice in the church anymore. But fasting was a common practice in Judaism. Common. Originally, though, it was only used for two purposes. It was originally only used in mourning for two purposes. Either because of death or because of sin. That's why you would fast. But technically, there was only one day. If you read your Old Testament, remember your Old Testament history, technically and scripturally, there was only one day that they, the Jews, were required to fast. Now, if you all remember your Old Testament history, can anybody tell me what that day was? Only one day were they required to fast. What's that? Stuart, Brother Stuart, exactly right. The Day of Atonement. You read throughout the Old Testament. Read the law, the Torah, specifically from Exodus through Deuteronomy, but specifically Leviticus through Deuteronomy, and you will not find days of fasting. Whether it's to mourn somebody dead or it's because of sin. Now, later, they did do that. But it wasn't required. It was only required on the Day of Atonement. Jesus knew that. And I do believe that the disciples, John the Baptist, but specifically the Pharisees, knew that as well. But here's the thing. Why did John the Baptist's disciples come to him and say, "We fast, and the scribes fast." But the scribes, the Pharisees fast. And the scribes of the Pharisees, which were Pharisees as well, they fast. We follow them. They're our religious leaders. Now you come along, then you're not doing it. So there's something wrong with that. That's what they're telling Jesus. The Pharisees, by the time of Jesus' day, they fasted 2 days a week. Not just on the Day of Atonement, which was required, but the Pharisees fasted 2 days a week. They fasted on Monday, and they fasted on Thursday. And we know later on what Jesus is going to, he's going to have talked about that. But you know why they would fast on Mondays and why they would fast on Thursdays? To show the people of the land, what I said last week, the Amharites, to show them just how pious they were. Just how they had got it all figured out. And only they did. Because it was the Pharisees, you see, who fasted 2 days a week. And they made sure everybody around them knew they fasted. And how do we know that? Because they would put on sackcloth and ashes, and they would go around, and they would let people know how they looked to show the people, see what we're doing? We're righteous. We've got it all figured out. We do. Y'all don't. But we do. You people of the land, you ain't got it. But we have. We've got it all figured out. So it was to demonstrate to them how pious they were. So in essence, what they're telling Jesus is that he and his disciples, you guys aren't pious. You don't have it figured out. What's up with you? When are you going to get it figured out? When are you going to do this? Now, John is in prison by this time. So that's why the disciples John the Baptist come as well. But notice what? Jesus just, he doesn't just let it go. He responds. And his response is insightful as well as logical. And he expects from them a negative response. He expects a negative response, what it lays it out in the Greek. He expects a negative response, but it's in such a way that they're not going to answer him publicly. They're not going to answer him outwardly. But he's expecting a negative response. But it's very insightful and logical what he says. Notice what he says. Jesus said to them, while the bridegroom is with them. Is with who? They had just referenced his disciples. Why aren't you fasting? So Jesus said, while the bridegroom is with them, it's with the disciples. Well, who's the bridegroom? What do you mean, a bridegroom? If you have a bridegroom, you got to have a bride, don't you? Shouldn't you? Where's the bride? And who's the bridegroom? He says, while the bridegroom is with them, the attendants of the bridegroom cannot fast. Can they? Now, he's not expecting an outward answer, as I said. But he is expecting a negative response. So long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. Jesus being very insightful and logical. When you have a wedding feast, that's what he's talking about. When you have a wedding feast and you have the bridegroom, because that's how the Jews would do it, they'd have a big feast. And what Tony was talking about with Jacob and Leah and Rachel, Laban, they'd have a big feast. Now, the reason why Jacob didn't know that it was Leah that was there instead of Rachel that he had relations with that first night was because, again, as what the text says, they would have a feast. And whenever they would have a feast, what that entailed was eating, but it also entailed drinking. So by the time Jacob gets back to his tent, he's out of it. In other words, he's a little sauced. So he doesn't know. Because that's what they would do. And then whenever that would happen, after the feast is over, then the father would bring the bride to the bridegroom. When they're all out of it. So that's what happened in that regard. But what Jesus is saying here is, when you have a bridegroom and he's with you, what do? Do you fast? Again, fasting was done for two reasons. It's in the context of mourning. Either because someone died or because of sin. But Jesus said the bridegroom is with them. So, yes, we're feasting. You see how logical he is being with the Pharisees? So he is expecting a negative response. Of course they're going to say, well, of course not. When you have a bridegroom with you, you feast. You eat and drink. And that's what Jesus and his disciples were doing. Because the bridegroom was with them. And he was pointedly telling them, he was using the title, he was using bridegroom as a title. And he was saying, me. I am the bridegroom. As long as they are with me, well, we're going to eat and drink. We're going to feast. But the time will come when the bridegroom is no longer with them. Then they will fast. In other words, then they will mourn. And they will have a right to mourn. But right now, the bridegroom's with them. Me. How do you think the Pharisees thought about that? This is the first time, you see, that Mark tells us that Jesus predicts his death and what it would cause. We read in John chapter 3, verse 29, these words. He who has the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, who stands and hears him, rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. So this joy of mine has been made full. That's John the Baptist talking. He's saying, I'm the friend of the bridegroom. And I rejoice in that. I like what William Barclay says years ago. So this will put it in your mind, give you a good picture of it. Jesus is using a vivid picture to tell the Pharisees why his disciples did not fast. After a Jewish wedding, the couple did not go away for a honeymoon like they do today. You know, like when we get married, you go away for a honeymoon. No, not in those days. After a Jewish wedding, the couple stayed at home after the wedding. And remember, in the Jewish days, the wedding as such, the engagement, the betrothal, would last for a year. And then you have the wedding. You have the feast. And then, that's what he says here. Listen, for a week or so, open house was kept. And there was continual feasting and rejoicing. Can you imagine that for a whole week? In a hard-wrought life, the wedding week was the happiest week in a man's life. To that week of happiness, there were invited the closest friends of the bride and the bridegroom. And they were called by the name children of the bride chamber. So what Jesus is doing here, he is likening his disciples to men who were children of the bride chamber. They were chosen guests at a wedding feast. There was actually a rabbinic ruling which said all in attendance on the bridegroom are relieved of all religious observances which would lessen their joy. So the wedding guests were actually exempt from all fasting. They could eat and drink to their heart's content, which is what they did. So now Jesus gives them, he tells them, in essence, he's telling the Pharisees, I'm the bridegroom. My disciples are with me. They are friends of the bridegroom. They are guests of the bridegroom. They are children of that bridal chamber. But then he gives them two illustrations about it. No one notice. The two illustrations he gives is about an old garment and a new patch. And what he says is this. No one, now he's being logical and very insightful. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, do they? You have a patch, it's unshrunk, and you're going to put it on an old garment. He says, otherwise, the patch pulls away from it. The new from the old, and a worse tear results. So what he is saying is you don't put the old, the new, onto the old. Then expect it to last. He's using that as an illustration to them about him. And about what he is doing. See him turning things inside out? And then he says, a worse tear results. And he gives a second illustration. No one puts new wine into old wineskins, otherwise the wine will burst the skin, and the wine is lost, and the skins too. But one puts new wine into fresh wineskins. what he's talking about here, brothers and sisters, is the inappropriateness of certain actions. He's giving two lessons about the new and the old. What he is saying here is, what I've come and what I represent is I do not represent the old. I represent the new. And he said, the new will not fit in with the old. In Luke 5:36, we read that, about that. This writer has said, the cloth was new and had not been shrunken. If it were used in the past, an old garment, which was already shrunken, it would shrink when it became wet. Tearing the old garment may rent still work. Same way with putting new wine into old wineskins. Things, what Jesus is saying is this. And this has to do with us today as well. Things that do not go together do not harmonize. And he is saying that things that do not harmonize, they shouldn't be put together. It's the things that harmonize that you put together. And Jesus is saying, no. Brother Enos Dowling gives a good example about the wineskins. This is what he says. Such a container was made from the skin of a goat, very carefully removed from the carcass, so that there would be no rent except at the neck and the four legs. All of these were then sewed up except one, which was used as a spout. It could be tied and untied. Such a bottle containing water or wine could be slung across the back of an animal and carried with ease. Wine expands as it ferments. The new wineskin would stretch to match the expansion of the wine, but the old wineskin is already stretched to the utmost, would be destroyed. And here's the principle. The principle is the same here as it was in his previous illustration. Things that go together should be put together. You see how he turned things inside out? One more incident and we'll close for the day. It occurs on the Sabbath. And once again, we have a controversy here between Jesus and the Pharisees. And this time, it concerns his disciples and not him. Notice what it says. And it happened that as he was passing through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples began to make their way along while picking. And they were picking the heads of grain. Now the old King James Version says corn, this cornfield. There was no corn back then. They didn't know what corn was. What they planted was either rye, barley, or wheat. So that's what they were doing. And the Pharisees again said to Jesus, see, they respond to Jesus. They say to Jesus, the Pharisees were saying to him, look, what they are doing is not lawful on the Sabbath. And that's in essence what they were telling Jesus is, stop them from doing what they're doing. Don't know what they are doing is wrong? In other words, it's like they're saying, what they're doing is illegal. It's wrong. to the Pharisees, you see, what they were doing was work. And thus they were breaking the Sabbath. Now notice this. They didn't question his disciples. They questioned Jesus directly. And their thinking, of course, is based on Exodus chapter 34, verse 21. This is their thinking. Exodus chapter 34, verse 21. I'll find this here. This is what it says. You shall work 6 days, but on the seventh day you shall rest. During plowing time and harvest, you shall rest. Well, what's that got to do with plucking grain? And then eating what was left. Now Deuteronomy chapter 23, 25 says it was permissible to do that, but doesn't say anything about the Sabbath. But here's the thing. Their complaint is based on the oral law, not the written. They leveled two charges against them. This is why to them it was work. By plucking the heads of the grain, what were they doing? The Pharisees said they were reaping. By taking, after doing that, what they would do is they would rub the grain so it would take the things off so they could eat it. By rubbing the grain, what were they doing? They were threshing. You couldn't do that. What's that? But that's what they thought. They were reaping and they were threshing. And so they shouldn't do that. So now Jesus responds to the Pharisees' accusations. What Jesus does, though, they're concentrating on the oral law. What Jesus does, though, he responds to them with the written law. With the scriptures. Jesus cites an Old Testament example, which is found in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. And Brother Mark Moore is correct. Doesn't bring it out so much in the English, but in the Greek it does. Jesus is being snide with them. He gives them a snide comment. He says, and he said to them, "Have you never read?" That's his snide comment. Have you never read what David did when he was in need and he and his companions were hungry? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest? Now there's a little technical thing about that there if you read 1 Samuel 21. And ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for anyone to eat except the priest, and he also gave it to those who were with him. He said, "Have you never read?" It's a snide comment. Now, it was not merely an insult. As Brother Moore said, it called attention to the fact that what they were doing had superseded the Word of God with oral law. They knew all too well the written Word. But they were a million miles away from its intent. So Jesus again turns things inside out here. Leviticus chapter 24, verses 5 through 9, which again, Jesus would know that they would know that, would say that you could do those things if you were in need. His disciples were hungry. They were going along the way. So that's what they did. They were in need. They were. Do you see this? And do you see what Jesus is doing? How he turns things inside out? He is comparing himself with David and his disciples with David's men. And if you look at Luke chapter 6 and Matthew chapter 12, you'll see a little more detail about this. There are parallel passages. But then Jesus states a second principle to them. And it has to do with the original intent of the law. Notice what he says. Jesus said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." That's very pointed to them. Because, see, they had thought it, they had it all figured out again. What Jesus was telling them was, do you not understand? Do you not realize that the Sabbath was to benefit God's people? It was not to become a burden to them. It was to benefit them. That God gave him the Sabbath for two reasons. For rest, and that they might worship Yahweh. So he is saying that you got it all wrong. You don't have it figured out. But I'm going to remind you what it is. And then Jesus puts paid to his reasoning by what he says next. Notice what he says next. And this is important for us to see, brothers and sisters. He says to them, "So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." And when Jesus said the Son of Man is in control of the Sabbath, what was he saying? He said, I am. I'm the Son of Man. I am in control of the Sabbath. Not you. Not you and all your rules and regulations. I am. He is saying here to them that I'm in control of the law. Me. So again, he turns things inside out to them because they haven't got it figured out. Because when Jesus says what this to them, he is telling them, I have authority. If my disciples are in need, they can do that. Not you. You have no reasoning to condemn them. Because I'm in control of it. The late years and years ago, back in the 1800s, J.W. McGarvey, one of my favorite biblical scholars, said this concerning this. He said that the Sabbath was made for man and not man. And not man for the Sabbath. That implies that when the welfare of man conflicts with the observance of the Sabbath, the letter must give way. But, and McGarvey, Brother McGarvey is correct in this, but of this man himself is not the judge, because he cannot judge with impartiality his own interest. No one is competent to judge in the case who does not know all that pertains to the welfare of man. and this is known only by the Lord. So we've thus seen how Jesus turned things inside out for the religious leaders of the day. And his disciples saw that. And they understood that. And here's the thing. He's still turning things inside out. See, we have to be careful of the fact that of thinking about rules and regulations and stuff, just like the Pharisees did, and binding them on people when we don't have the authority to do so. And that's what many want to do. But Jesus says, No. I'm in control. Never forget that. He's in control. He has the authority. And here's the thing. We're going to stand, we're going to sing that song, I Surrender All. Here's the thing about this, and this is what Jesus is telling them. It's me. If you want to have things figured out, if you want to live your life right, if you want to live your life in such a way, then what Jesus is saying is, you have to allow me to turn your life inside out. Because Jesus is saying, y'all don't have it figured out. But if you come to me, you will. Because I'll turn your life inside out. See, that's what he wants. But in order to do that, what the Pharisees weren't willing to do is you have to surrender to him and that he has all authority. That's what people need today. Well, we need to get across to them.